Coming up, leaders of the Jewish community speak out about Bernard Madoff.
The very first question that the Almighty asks us is whether we conducted our business affairs with integrity and honesty.
And big bonuses for executives at companies that helped cause the financial meltdown, the outrage. Plus, this young man faces years in prison for a nonviolent act of civil disobedience in an attempt to protect the environment. Was he right to break the law?
Civil disobedience is ethical because the law and morality are not always the same.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. As the news broke this week that AIG, the huge insurance company, had paid $165 million in bonuses to executives in the unit that helped cause the international recession, at the same time that AIG was taking bailout money from Washington to stay afloat, there was a national eruption of moral outrage. Why should the richest few be paid so much more than the average worker? What are the public responsibilities of a private company? We'll have more later in the program. First, the Pope's trip to Africa. Benedict XVI began a 7-day pilgrimage to Cameroon and Angola this week, his first visit to Africa since becoming Pope. Kim Lawton has more.
The Pope arrived in Cameroon on Tuesday. His trip celebrates the 500th anniversary of the arrival of Catholic missionaries in sub-Saharan Africa. Today, Catholics make up about 20% of Africa's population. Benedict addressed the continent's many problems during meetings with political and religious leaders. He condemned secularization and corruption and urged a more just society where he said everyone can live with dignity. And he called on the church to lead the fight against poverty and disease. The Pope also reignited a long-standing controversy. Speaking to journalists on board the papal plane, Benedict said the AIDS crisis cannot be solved with condoms. On the contrary, he said, they increase the problem. AIDS activists and even some fellow Catholics criticized that, saying condoms are a necessary tool to fight the epidemic which has devastated Africa. A Vatican spokesman said the Pope was simply reiterating the Church's position that condoms should never be used, even to stop the spread of AIDS. On another hot-button issue, Benedict met with Muslim leaders and urged peaceful coexistence in the face of growing tensions between Islam and Christianity. Genuine religion, he said, rejects all forms of violence. Throughout the visit, Benedict praised the vibrancy of the Catholic faith in Africa and urged his flock to persevere despite the many challenges they face. During a mass in the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé, he said, God has not forgotten you. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
In Sudan this week, President Omar al-Bashir said he will force all foreign aid agencies out of Darfur within a year. Earlier, the president defiantly rejected the International Criminal Court's accusations that he committed genocide and crimes against humanity. The United Nations says millions in Darfur are at risk without the humanitarian relief. The U.S. State Department is joining a U.N. effort to persuade Bashir to relent. The U.S. has endorsed a U.N. declaration calling for the worldwide decriminalization of homosexuality. The Obama administration joined the European Union, Japan, and Mexico in supporting the statement that condemns human rights violations based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The Bush administration rejected the statement when it first circulated last year, and the majority of UN member nations have not signed on. The statement is opposed by Islamic nations and the Vatican. Now, the financial story, beginning with Bernard Madoff, the Ponzi schemer who spent this week in jail waiting to be sentenced for bilking investors out of billions of dollars. Among the hardest hit of Madoff's victims were members of the Jewish community, especially Jewish charities. Betty Rollin reports.
These Jewish teachers are celebrating the festive holiday of Purim, which ironically is about Jewish survival. You would never guess from the spirit of the evening that the foundation sponsoring them has just lost practically all its money. The Lappin Foundation in Salem, Massachusetts, one of Madoff's many victims, has been devoted to keeping Jewish heritage alive. The foundation for years has sent Jewish teens to Israel, has trained and inspired teachers, and has educated children about all things Jewish. Robert Lappin started the foundation 16 years ago.
If our children don't stay Jewish, then our Jewish future effectively disappears. I care very deeply about that because I feel that the Jewish people are a very unique and wonderful family.
All the foundation's money, as well as most of Lappin's own money, was invested in Madoff securities.
Portfolio manager from here in Salem called me where I was in Florida and told me that Madoff had been arrested. And as I recall, there was a long silence as I, because I was stunned. And I said, "Does that mean that we're wiped out?" And she said, yes.
As a result, the foundation closed its doors, but Lappin supporters rallied.
I'm surprised. I'm very grateful. There was an enormous outpouring of support and sympathy from the community.
From the Jewish community.
From the Jewish community, yeah. And also from some from the non-Jewish community as well.
How did you feel about the fact that the person who really swindled you out of your money was Jewish?
I can't tell you how disappointed and terrible I feel that a Jewish person would do that.
I do think that psychologically in the Jewish community we often feel that our fellow Jew would never do that to us. And I think that created an atmosphere of trust.
Among the thousands of Madoff victims, Jewish institutions, charities, and individuals were hit especially hard.
Anything to say to your victims?
It's reported that Yeshiva University in New York lost $110 million, Hadassah Hospital $90 million, Elie Wiesel's Foundation for Humanity closed down, as did many others. Psychopath, said Mr. Wiesel, is too nice a word for Bernard Madoff. Rabbi Yitzhak Breidowitz says Madoff's crime is an affront to the Jewish religion.
Chilul Hashem, which means the desecration and disgrace of God's name. When a person behaves in such a way that the Jewish people, the Jewish religion, the Torah, and ultimately God, is treated with disrespect and disdain in the eyes of others. That is considered to be a sin that is much more serious than the particular actions which constituted the sin in the first place. The Talmud, in fact, tells us when we go up to heaven and we give an accounting of ourselves, the very first question that the Almighty asks us is whether we conducted our business affairs with integrity and honesty.
Rabbi William Rudolph of Beth El Congregation in Bethesda, Maryland.
Money isn't bad in Jewish tradition, but not taking care of other people's money is especially a large sin, and it's a great obligation. There's a great story in the Torah that when Moses was finished building the tabernacle, he had to make a strict accounting of all the materials that he used. And this was Moses, was the leader of the people and spoke to God directly and should be beyond reproach.
If you're not honest in business, you're not a religious Jew. Because the same Bible, the same God that requires certain ritual observances, keeping kosher, observing the Shabbat, and the like, says you have to be honest in your business affairs.
If you are Jewish, you also have to give tzedakah. You must be charitable.
And I was wondering if you'd be willing to donate that or more this year.
The volunteers at the Jewish Federation annual fundraiser in Washington, D.C., are working overtime this year. The combination of the recession and Madoff created a perfect storm.
We've actually done an emergency campaign this year, which we're in the middle of, to try to make up for some of the losses.
Deborah Cohen is a trustee with the United Jewish Endowment Fund in Washington, D.C.
For charities, the economic recession and the Madoff losses have combined to produce reduced resources, increase in demand on the charities, a feeling of betrayal by the financial industry, and more than anything else, a loss of trust in charitable institutions.
One of the lessons of the Madoff catastrophe is that charities, as do investors, have to be more careful.
There's a verse in the book of Deuteronomy that talks about bribes, and it says, the bribe, the financial gain, shall blind the eyes of the wise man. And I think we get blinded with the prospect of some great return. I think he was offering over 10% returns on various investments. That impairs judgment. That takes away clarity of thought.
Finally, the result of Madoff's action in the Jewish community is both hurt and the resolve to do what Jews have always done, continue. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Betty Rollin in Danvers, Massachusetts.
Madoff's scheme was devastating to his victims, and so were the decisions made by many others in the financial world who helped cause a global recession. President Obama spoke this week of the need to change the culture that permitted the meltdown.
A situation where excess greed, excess compensation, excess risk-taking have all made us vulnerable and left us holding the bank.
We want to pursue the moral issues of the meltdown with David Miller, who teaches business ethics and directs the Faith and Work Initiative at Princeton University, after a career in corporate finance. His most recent book is God at Work. David, welcome. Let's begin with the enormous gap in pay between the richest few and the average employee. Is that difference, in your judgment, fundamentally unfair?
It's a great question. In fact, the final exam topic I've given my students in the business ethics class is executive compensation just or just obscene? In some cases, multiples of 350 times the lowest paid employee is outrageous and not just, not moral. But there are cases when people have added value to society, to their organization, created jobs, dealt in highly risky industries in prudent and responsible ways, and we should reward those people handily. But indeed, there are some egregious examples, particularly those who get paid for non-performance.
And the consequences of that for young people, bright young people coming into the workforce. You've talked about that.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a shift. The people go into college and they're bright and they're excited. They want to go out and change the world and make a contribution. And then they get lured to Wall Street. Indeed, I've been there myself. So I understand the attraction, the competition, the high salaries. But maybe this is a chance for people to rethink that they ought to become teachers or dentists or scientists or technologists and use their great intellect and skills in ways to create value for society other than through financial engineering. I don't want to minimize financial engineering, but there are other great ways that some of our minds have not been looking at over the past decade or two.
And President Obama has been talking this past week, about precisely that, some kind of change in the corporate culture, the business culture. What would that look like?
Boy, it's such an important issue. How can we have a corporate culture that accents character, that accents the common good, and not just earnings per share or a penny more per share per quarter? That's a new culture. Is it possible that companies can make a decent profit, create wealth, create jobs, provide goods and services for society, and maybe even be a moral community to develop its people? I think it can, but it will take leadership that's committed to a new vision.
And when a corporation has enormous power, such power that if it messes up, it can hurt the entire country and perhaps the entire world, should that corporation have a special degree of regulation?
I'm reluctant to pick out or single a particular corporation, but certainly, and we've done it historically, certain industries, the energy industry, the communication industry, some are so important and so big that we do regulate them. I don't know yet if the problem with our current financial meltdown is that that we need new regulation or that the existing regulators didn't do their job. The SEC, the ratings agencies, the actuarial firms, a lot of people could have caught this and didn't. Certainly, people need to do their existing jobs better as far as oversight is concerned. Whether we need new regulation, the jury's out on that.
You, as I said, you used to work in the financial business. What are your friends there, the friends that you have who have worked there, what do they tell you about what went wrong, how they feel about it, what they might have done wrong?
Yeah, I work with a group up in Greenwich, Connecticut. We know it as the hedge fund capital of the world, a group called Greenwich Leadership Forum, people trying to connect their faith and their work and their morals and their values. Some people feel a bit beleaguered by the current situation because they love their job and they're good at it, and they are trying to do it in a moral, ethical way and create liquidity and creative instruments for companies. Others, however, have realized they've bought into something. They've almost become addicted to the power and the money. One friend who recently was laid off by AIG as part of their troubles privately said that he felt he had made his company his false idol, if you will, that work had become, and his company that he was very proud of actually, had become a false idol. And he was now trying to reorient his life to have balance where faith, family, and other priorities, including his work, would have the right balance, the right perspective.
Mm-hmm. David Miller of Princeton University, many thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
We have a story today about another ethical question, civil disobedience. If you care deeply about an issue, for instance, global warming, are you justified in breaking the law to try to address it? And if you do that, are you ready to go to prison? Lucky Severson reports.
Some think Tim DeChristopher committed a crime and should be punished. Others think breaking the law was the right thing to do. This University of Utah student, whose only previous brush with the law consisted of two speeding tickets, hardly seems like someone who would purposely break the law. But here he is, facing prison time for committing a felony deliberately.
Jail is certainly a scary thing, but I've been scared for my future for a long time. I think the scariest thing for my whole generation is that we stay on the path that we're on right now. Jail is not nearly as scary as dealing with the real consequences of climate change that we're expected to see in my lifetime.
DeChristopher is a devoted environmentalist, has been since he was a kid. He's especially worried about what man is doing to hasten global warming. He was moved to tears after speaking with noted Stanford University environmentalist Terry Root at a conference a few months ago.
And she said, there were things we could have done in the 80s and things we could have done in the 90s, but I'm sorry, I think it's too late. It shook me to the core. I literally went outside the hotel where the conference was being held, and I just cried. And I went through a period of really deep despair, where it was almost like I was mourning for my future, and I was mourning for the future of all of us.
For one thing, he was convinced that the Bush administration was auctioning off too much of the West to drilling companies. So when he heard the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, was conducting an auction in December of last year, offering leases for over 350,000 acres of public land in Utah, some of it in pristine Red Rock country, he decided to attend, expecting to disrupt the auction and then get kicked out.
And instead, I went inside, and as soon as I got inside the door, an official said, "Hi, are you here for the auction?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Are you here as a bidder?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am."
Dressed like a student and carrying a backpack, DeChristopher started bidding simply to drive up the prices. But before long, he was winning bids.
I figured I would probably go to prison. And so I had to ask myself if I could live with that. But on the other hand, seeing this opportunity to protect some of this land and keep some of this oil in the ground and give us a better chance for a livable future, if I turn my back on that opportunity, can I live with that? And I thought, no.
He ended up winning bids on 13 lease parcels over 22,000 acres for about $1.7 million until the auction was abruptly stopped.
And then a BLM agent came straight over to me and showed his badge and said, let's go speak outside.
And then what?
And then he asked me what my intentions were, whether or not I intended to pay. And I told him very clearly that my intent was to disrupt the auction, that this was an act of civil disobedience.
If you're charged with a federal felony, you're in serious trouble.
The Christopher's attorney, Ron Yengich, acknowledges his client committed an act of civil disobedience. But because it's against federal law to bid without the intention or means of paying, his client is facing 3 to 5 years in prison.
The idea that he is a good kid, he's not a nonviolent kid, he did it, if not on the spur of the moment, he certainly did it because of a deep-seated belief that this country should be green.
Right, I think he should be prosecuted, yes.
Kathleen Scama is Director of Government Affairs for the Independent Petroleum Association. She says the industry has a good record when it comes to the environment, and the Christopher did wrong and should be punished.
I don't think this rises to the level of a case where civil disobedience really is warranted. We reclaim the land. We are very protective of the environment with our activity, despite what you hear in the press and despite the rhetoric of environmental groups. So, unfortunately, in this case, I believe the perception that oil and gas is going to come in and destroy the land has caused this person perhaps to do something, to break the law.
Civil disobedience is ethical because the law and morality are not always the same.
David Keller is a professor of philosophy and director of the Center for the Study of Ethics at Utah Valley University.
We have a responsibility to be civil disobedient where in situations where our complacency emboldens the power and those laws which are unjust.
Pat Shea is a former director of the BLM in the Clinton administration and is also a lawyer defending the Christopher. He says the Christopher's behavior may have been illegal, but it was patterned after the actions of some of the world's great leaders.
Just as with Thoreau or Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi, he had this ability to look at the situation, deal with it in an existential way, and then come through with his actions on a principled manner. And that's something that I think most people would love to see in their children and maybe in themselves.
Attorney Yengich says civil disobedience in and of itself is not a defense.
But the primary defense would be what lawyers call the choice of evils defense. And that's a historic defense about someone who is basically protesting a government action, and they're saying that I did this even though it may be technically against the law because there's a greater evil out there.
One of the concerns expressed by critics was how near some of the leases were to national parks. In fact, national park officials were so concerned they had asked the BLM to delay the auction. 10 of the parcels to Christopher won were located near Arches National Park in southern Utah. Former BLM Director Pat Shea.
I think they were trying to push through in the final days of the Bush administration as many energy leases as they possibly could. So there were a number of commercial energy companies that had an interest to get as much as they could before the curtain came down and there was a new administration.
These were pretty big companies.
Kathleen Scama's association represents many of those energy companies, and she says they are performing a valuable service with little impact on the environment.
In Utah, less than 1% of public lands, much less than 1% of public lands, is disturbed for oil and gas so that we can provide people heat for their homes. That's a basic human necessity. We can't go back to freezing in the dark or back to burning fire, you know, firewood in the fireplace or shoveling coal into like we had to do 100 years ago.
But certainly one of the benefits of civil disobedience is bringing attention and stimulating public discourse. In the case of Tim DeChristopher, I do think that it is beneficial that we are having a discussion in Utah about whether he is a terrorist or not, a saboteur, an exemplary citizen, a criminal, whether charges should be brought against him or not. All of this is healthy for a democracy.
Attorney Yengich says that above all, civil disobedience must be done in a civil way.
We've got to be careful And I guess this is why we say, when we talk about doing acts of civil disobedience, that they've got to be done with respect for everyone. And maybe, if the government rules against you, then you have to take the punishment as part of the process, yeah.
As of now, the Obama administration has withdrawn those leases offered in December. Now, Tim DeChristopher is waiting to find out how this will affect the case against him. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson reporting.
On our calendar, Baha'is and Zoroastrians celebrate their new year, called Nowruz, which occurs at the spring equinox. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website, including more of our interviews about the Madoff scandal and business ethics. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more scenes from the Pope's trip to Africa.